welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome to the political cesspool, everyone. I'm your host, James Edwards, coming to you live from a very cold and frigid Memphis, Tennessee, this Saturday evening, December 5th. And it certainly feels like it is December 5th as the temperatures have dropped below 30 degrees, which is very cold for us here in the Mid-South. But nevertheless, we're going to make sure it's very hot and toasty here in the political cesspool this evening as we come to you live from AM 1380, WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, and going out over the best radio network in the world, Liberty News Radio, and their AM/FM affiliates across the country, not to mention internet, satellite, and telephone, Liberty News Wire. Check it all out at libertynewsradio.com, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Lot on our agenda this evening, as always, and here to help me sift through it, none other than Mr. Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you tonight?
At your service as usual, James. You know, cold weather doesn't intimidate us because we just turn up the heat all the more whenever that happens.
Yes, we do. Rain, sleet, snow, shine, good weather, hot weather, cold weather. We are here every week, year round, to bring you the kind of news that you're just not going to find on any other mainstream media entity. And we're going to talk about that. You know, we're so lucky to do what we do, and we're so lucky to have the listening audience that we have. And we have gotten just, for whatever reason, this week, I mean, we're always subjected to a lot of correspondence via email, snail mail, what have you. And this week we have gotten a particularly big load. And, Keith, I know I've forwarded some of those to you and the other member of the hosting staff. And we're going to take the time throughout the program tonight to read some of your emails that have come into the station. But, Keith, some of them quite poignant.
Well, I tell you what, we are always amazed and gratified by the caliber of people that are regular listeners to this show. We have, I think, probably the most intelligent and the most aware group of people listening to us of any radio show that I can think of. People get well informed when they listen to the cesspool, don't they, James?
Well, they absolutely do, and if only everyone who went to vote we're listening to the political cesspool, we could turn this country around in no time. And that brings me to the first item we want to talk about tonight. I have to ask myself the rhetorical question after watching Barack Obama's speech, which was televised by all the networks earlier in the week. I believe it was Tuesday night. It was definitely Tuesday night. Whatever happened, Keith, to the anti-war Obama? And as I wrote on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week, you know, stupid white liberals fell for Obama's lies on the campaign trail that he was going to bring the troops home. But as we knew then, as we know now, he never had any intention of actually doing so. The people who actually call the shots on foreign and military policy are a lot more powerful than the president is, and Obama knew it, and he's not about to oppose them. He was simply telling the liberals what they wanted to hear in order to get elected. And whatever happened to all those anti-war protesters anyway? Where's, you know, what was her name? Keith, Cindy Sheehan, Kathy Sheehan, you know, the woman who now rightfully so was opposing Bush's policies. But, you know, the media is not giving any of these anti-war protesters any lip service anymore now that the Republican bad guy is out of the White House. So anyway, I guess war is only bad when a Republican president is in office. But Michael Moore is angry about Obama sending more troops into Afghanistan. He wrote an open letter to Barack telling him what a betrayal of his voters his decision is. And as I said, Keith, Moore is pretty upset. Now, he's not quite angry enough to go on a hunger strike just yet, but sources say he is contemplating sitting down on Obama. And, of course, that would end things for Barack.
I think Michael Moore's doctors have approved him going on a hunger strike. In fact, they're begging him to do it. But see, yeah. What this shows again, James, is that presidents are figureheads now. There's, as President Dwight Eisenhower noted back in the 50s, a military-industrial complex that has to be fed constantly, the Halliburtons and McDonnell Douglases and the other weapon makers that we have in America. They need perpetual war so they can make perpetual profits. Furthermore, I think another subtitle for this whole episode might be Obama meets AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. They definitely don't want America backing down from fighting wars for the state of Israel and shedding blood for the state of Israel. And they're not about to let any American politician vary from that script. I don't care whether he is considers himself the second coming of Chairman Mao. Everything's fine. See, that's what neoconservatives are, for example. They're supposedly conservatives, but they're just like liberals, except you have to fight wars in the Middle East. And that serves, of course, the interests of the state of Israel. And guess what? Most neoconservatives are Jewish. Well, likewise, when the left gets in, they find out that, you know, you can talk about being anti-war till the cows come home, but if you try to shut down wars in the Middle East, you're going to run into a brick wall. And that's what Obama has done. So Obama is just falling into place, just like the Bushes.
Well, we call it, and to be sure, the Republicans are no less problematic on the big issues than the Democrats are. They're two wings of the same buzzard. They answer to the same puppet master. And we knew, as I said, months before Obama was even nominated by the Democrats, that no matter who was nominated, nothing was going to change there without the Israeli stamp of approval on that policy decision. And once again, we've been proven right. But the thing that gets me isn't that we were proven right on this. I saw firsthand on Tuesday night, as I was watching Obama announce that he was sending another 30,000 troops into Afghanistan. Of course, he campaigned again the entire time that he was going to end the war the day he got in office. It was all hokum. But Keith, I was watching the telecast in a public location on Tuesday night. I was out and about. And this guy there, he kind of reminded me of Moe. No. You know, at Moe's Tavern on The Simpsons, Barney, the real bellicose guy, the town drunk. Anyway, there was this guy there who was watching the Obama speech, and he turned it up and got real belligerent. Oh, I want all the idiots in the bar who voted for Obama to get a load of this hope and change, you know, which is fine. You know, I agree with his sentiments there, but this is what got me. Obama went into this whole speech, you know, reading from the teleprompter as he always does. And then at the end of the thing, I turned around and started talking with my table. And then I hear this guy getting really excited. Now, this guy reminds me of, you know, kind of lower middle class, kind of low class. He was a white guy, just kind of ignorant, you know, kind of, you know.
Often in error, but never
excitable.
In doubt.
It's kind of hard. I'm trying to it doesn't matter what the guy was, but this was the kind of guy he was. Anyway, after Obama's speech was over, I hear this guy get really loud. He goes, "Oh, here comes my guy. My guy's gonna give it to Obama with both barrels. Watch this." And I turned around, and it was John McCain on TV. So this just goes to show that people really are as dumb. The voting public really is as dumb as we think they are. This guy truly believes that McCain represented some sort of different philosophy. We know he didn't on anything of substance, but yet he still has the power. The media has the power to condition people to believe that McCain stands for something and Obama stands for something else. And the fact that they are so gullible is very, very dangerous. We need more people listening to shows like this.
Well, it shows the need for a show like this. And what it also shows, James, is the need for a booklet like our booklet that we've just put out, Liberalism and Its Effects on American Society. We need people to get educated about what true conservatism is, as opposed to, you know, buying into, if you buy into the idea that John McCain is an authentic conservative, then you've bought phony conservatism. You bought patent medicine, adulterated medicine, snake oil, rather than the real thing. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there like it, which just points out the need for a booklet like ours. We're trying to get this out. Because
we're trying to get the message out by all means necessary. We do it here on the radio. We're reaching a very sizable audience. We've got the website. We've got the booklet now that we're offering as an incentive to anyone who donates to our program between now and Christmas Day. But this is the point, because these people exist, ladies and gentlemen. I know, as Keith said, we have a very intelligent audience. Our audience's intelligence is certainly...
We're preaching to the choir with you people.
well above average, but there are people out there, and these people go vote. That's what's so dangerous. The people like this guy go vote. He's just as dangerous as the liberals, the fanatical liberals who go out and vote for Obama. We gotta reach these people. We gotta reach these people and bring them in and educate them, and we're doing our best, and we need your help to do it. But I tell you, when I saw this guy get so excited over John McCain, of all people, who is the worst of all the Republicans, and there are some bad ones. The Republicans, you know, at best, they feign opposition on some of our issues. They pretend to be against abortion, although they never really do anything to stop it. They pretend to be against, well, they don't even really pretend to be against homosexual marriage anymore, but at least Bush, you know, wanted civil unions. But I don't know. I mean, there's really not anything they can hang their hats on. But we got to take a break. But the point is, we were right on Obama and the war. We knew he wasn't going to end it. He was going to escalate it. And then we've got people out there like this guy that I saw on Tuesday. We've got to reach these people, and that's what we're fighting to do. We'll be back with more right after this.
We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
20 days until Christmas. Where has 2009 gone? Welcome back to the political cesspool. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget the political cesspool this Christmas and this great season of giving. We celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. That is the meaning of Christmas, by the way. I know everybody likes to say happy holidays these days, but we still remember what it's all about. If you're giving away all these great gifts, don't forget to support the political cesspool. I made a donation to the political cesspool today myself. I try to donate to the show at least once a month, even though we host the show, we still do our part to support it. We don't want to ask you to do anything that you're we're not doing, and if you do donate to the cesspool between now and Christmas Day, we're going to give you that great booklet Keith and I have been talking about for the last couple of weeks, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society. We want you to have a copy of this. It had this gentleman that I met at the restaurant on Tuesday night had a copy of this. Perhaps he wouldn't have been so excited to see John McCain on TV, and perhaps he would have known the truth about McCain. And Keith, with that, I know you want to add a little more elaboration.
Yeah, it's just so incredibly ironic that out of all the people that this authentic red state American that you encountered at the bowling alley pointed to as his role model or as his hero, he points to John McCain. John McCain is a rhino, a Republican in name only, a Rockefeller Republican, a country club Republican, a neoconservative, everything inauthentic in the conservative movement John McCain exemplifies. I remember during his presidential campaign, he absolutely had a visceral disgust for red state America, and particularly his roots in rural Mississippi, where the McCain family came from and had a plantation. In fact, the only time he ventured into Tennessee, except right before the Tennessee primary, was when he came on Martin Luther King Day to Memphis, to the National Civil Rights Museum, to grovel at the feet of black Democrats and apologize for not supporting the Martin Luther King establishment of his birthday as a national holiday back in the 1980s under Reagan. And he was mealy-mouthing, saying, I'm sorry, and this, and all these people booing and hooting him. What a wonderful photo op for a strong Republican presidential candidate. You know, if that didn't turn you off on that total wimp, then nothing would, you know. And he was a phony war hero. The idea that being captured makes you a war hero, you know, the reports out were that he was called the canary by his captors in North Vietnam because he sang so much. And you know, this person was a member of the Gang of 14 that blocked Bush's attempts to put conservatives on the federal bench. We've got another story about the federal bench later on in this hour tonight. But, you know, this brings us to another local interest story. Russell Wiseman is the brother of Lying Wiseman. Lying Wiseman is the neoconservative head of the Shelby County Republican Party. Shelby County is a county that Memphis, Tennessee is in. Lying Wiseman has been quoted as saying he's a Karl Rove Republican, not a Pat Buchanan Republican. Karl Rove, good son of Israel, is, again, everything that's inauthentic in the conservative movement. And he did everything he could to build a firewall between authentic conservatives and the Republican Party hierarchy. But, you know, I guess Lange and his brother Russell, who is the mayor of Arlington, a small city in Shelby County, thought that somehow they're going to buy a dispensation from the left and from liberal critics by being this kind of squishy, moderate, liberal, neoconservative. But Russell Wiseman is now in hot water with the local newspaper and with the talking heads and the big power brokers in town because he dared to say on his blog that he has that Obama preempted the Charlie Brown Christmas special on purpose. And furthermore, he called Obama our Muslim president. Well, look, besides being wrong on both counts and sounding stupid, what this shows is that you can't be Casper Milquetoast enough to avoid being a target of the left and their efforts to destroy and dismantle anyone who dares to call themselves a conservative. So why not be the authentic thing? Why not be the real thing rather than trying to pussyfoot around the way that these neoconservatives like Lange and Russell Wiseman do? Let's be the real
thing.
Stand up for America.
Here's another thing about these neocon, Keith. I guess it really just depends on their mindset. If they are stark raving liberals who are just infiltrating the Republican Party, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, the Republican Party's DOA, but if they are stark raving liberals who are just coming into the Republican Party to render it obsolete, to render it nothing more than controlled opposition, and they're just doing their job for the liberal team by coming over and serving this purpose, then that's one thing. But if they truly believe that by trying to placate the false gods of cultural Marxism, that they will somehow curry favor with the moderates and the liberals and somehow have this big tent Republican Party one day, they're fooling themselves. Never has that worked. And throughout the course of history, we are reminded that the liberals and the minorities see this as weakness on behalf of true paleoconservatism for so-called conservatives to act in this manner. I mean, take the Civil Rights Revolution, for example. You know, the blacks in this country didn't erect monuments to Earl Warren at the end of the day. I mean, it was their people. It was their people. Never will we curry enough favor with the left to be idolized, and if they think that's the path of least resistance, this is the way they can go to build up power and recognition and become a darling of the media. I mean, they're wrong because, as you said, Keith, you cross the line one time, it doesn't matter how milquetoast you've been, you're still going to be put on a spit. And at the end of the day, they're still not going to respect you because, well, there's nothing to respect there.
Well, it's like Vilfredo Pareto said, the Italian anti-socialist. I was reading an article by our mutual friend Tom Sunik in the Occidental Observer, where he quoted him as saying, "He who insists on being a lamb will find a wolf to eat him." And if you're going to be a neoconservative, you're going to be a Casper Milquetoast conservative, you're making yourself into a lamb. And guess what? Rather than deflecting criticism, you're drawing attention to yourself, and the wolves will eat you.
Well, that's exactly right. And either way, it's the path to destruction that they're embarking on, whatever their intentions are. But the point is, and I guess this goes back to what we were saying earlier, there are a lot of good people who are still being fooled by this. Now, yes, a lot of it has to do with the media's power of manipulation. But at the same time, the buck always has to stop with the individual. There is no reason for that gentleman I saw on Tuesday night to be so ignorant as to believe that McCain is an authentic voice of anything that is good and decent or anything that we would want to associate with as people who want to put America first. I mean, it's just folly.
John McCain would sacrifice that man's interests up on the altar of political.
But his heart's probably in the right place,
Keith.
That's what's so disconcerting, is that this guy probably believes him to be a conservative because he's a conservative.
Yeah. Well, see, there are a lot of people that have conservative instincts that just aren't educated. Again, read our book. Find out the difference between real full-bodied conservatism and this counterfeit conservatism that's being peddled in the mainstream media.
Well, with that being said, we're going to take another break here in just a moment. You're listening to The Political Cesspool on Liberty News Radio. And by the way, when you're doling out all those Christmas gifts, don't forget to support Liberty News Radio as well. This program wouldn't exist if it weren't for the network that carries us. And we want you to remember Liberty News Radio. In addition to The Political Cesspool, check out both of the websites, libertynewsradio.com and thepoliticalcesspool.org, and find out ways you can help carry our message into the new year, 2010. It'll be the sixth year of existence for The Political Cesspool, and we want to start off on solid footing. We got a lot more to come tonight, a lot more to come. And we're going to get to it right after these words from our sponsors. We're going to open up the next segment with one of your emails, and then I'm going to turn Keith Alexander loose all over again. Stay tuned for that. We'll be back in a jiffy.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Peggy Sue. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place.
If it's the last thing we ever do. Alexander in studio with me for the first hour. Winston Smith will be joining me for the second and third hours. Eddie the Bombiner Miller. Keith, tell everyone where Eddie is.
Eddie is on safari. He is in the in deepest, darkest Mississippi River bottoms now, out there with his pith helmet and his elephant gun, shooting at squirrels, anything else that moves out there.
It's a verbatim quote from the Bombardier. He's been hunting his guts out, and he's still out. You never can find Ed. He's either in a deer stand up a tree somewhere, or as Keith said, in the Mississippi River bottoms, but he'll be back soon enough. Bill Rowland is working on a pair of very big interviews for us, and it's going to be nice to get Bill back in studio. He's had work conflicts for the last couple of weeks. But nevertheless, that's the hosting staff, me, Keith, Eddie, Winston, and Bill. We do our best to bring you a thoughtful program each and every week, and apparently our program is thought-provoking, at least to some people. We were mentioning just before the break that we were going to open up this segment by reading one of the many, many, many emails we got this week. And this one was, I tell you, after doing this show for 5 years, 5 years and change now, this was one of the most thoughtful and generous emails I've ever read. And more so than that, this listener, who was a first-time writer into the program, really nailed everything that I want this show to be. In other words, when we do this radio program, the effect we want to have on folks is the effect that this listener says we've had on him. And I'm going to read his email real quick. Of course, for privacy's sake, I'm going to leave off his name. But it reads, Mr. Edwards, I'm not one to write emails to people I don't know, but I believe this should be an exception. I've seen your video clips from CNN and read quite a few of your blogs. What has attracted my attention is the method in which you attack these issues. For quite some time now, I've stated that the reason that organizations such as, and he uses the KKK, for example, have failed so dismally in the past few decades is that their message is tainted with blind racism and delivered by idiots. It appears that the only thing I've wished for, you have provided. You write intelligibly. You speak clearly and calmly, and most importantly, state factual reasons for your stances. Most politically correct liberal organizations would have us believe that any distaste for another race stems entirely from a fear of difference or change. They broadcast the message that whites who dislike blacks dislike them for no other reason than their skin color. What seems to be ignored entirely is the fact that the overwhelming majority of white people I have encountered dislike some minorities for their actions, nothing more. They dislike illegal aliens for their actions. This seems reasonable to me, yet popular American cultural labels is racism. To wrap this up, let me just say that I'm glad to see a well-spoken and thoughtful representative of my beliefs going public with them. Also wanted you to know that here in Philadelphia, and Keith, you were just about to mention a story involving Philadelphia, where the very matters you fear will come to pass have already begun, but you have supporters here. I'm sure they're abundant in your home state and places such as Texas. But don't count us out. Even us Democrats have had enough. And although we won't see eye to eye on everything, there are quite a few of us ready to band together with our southern and western brothers to protect a higher standard of living in this country. Keep up the good work. Keith, that's why we do this show. I mean, this guy gets it. This guy, and God bless him, and thank you, sir, for writing if you're listening tonight, and I'm going to write you back. That's why we do this show, and to be fair and to be clear, it's a collaborative effort. Everything we do here is based on the work that the other men that I host this show with provide and our support team behind the scenes, but that's why there is a show called The Political Cesspool. That's the kind of message and image we want to project.
Well, you know, it takes me back in time to the Civil Rights Movement, you know, which was a liberal divide and conquer strategy. A lot of people in the North and in blue state America thought this is only going to affect white people in the South. White people in the South deserve it. They've been bad to black people. And then suddenly, lo and behold, they started busing in places like Boston and whatnot, and suddenly the left had stopped preaching and started meddling, as they say down here in the South. But by then it was too late to stop this onslaught, which has built momentum by going through the South. This is what people need to understand about liberalism. Every bit of it is bad. It is a relentless foe. Like Trotsky said, you may not be interested in the revolution, but the revolution is interested in you. They'll get you in Philadelphia just as assuredly as they'll get you in Memphis or in Meridian, Mississippi.
Well, and Keith, one thing also that should also be stated, and this is a fact, some of the most ardent and, dare I say, violent protests to busing came from places like Boston. Of course, you never hear that in today's whitewashed history, but nevertheless, it was the truth. And rightfully so. I mean, people should have opposed that, the forced integration at the point of a bayonet upon ideas forced upon people that they do not want. The circumvention of freedom of association and assembly and speech and everything else that happened during that dark decade. But Keith, this gentleman, and he certainly is that, and well-educated, well-written too, writes us from Philadelphia tonight, and it just so happens you have a story that originates from up there.
Right. Well, just to put meat on the bone and show exactly what we were saying, that it's happening everywhere, even up in Philadelphia. There's an article in our local paper that's kind of a return to our behind enemy lines mentality. Racial tensions at Philadelphia school escalate into assaults. And what it's about is that there is a school, a public high school in South Philadelphia called South Philadelphia High School. And the student body is 1,200, 70% black, 18% Asian, about 2% white, 10% other. And it has been labeled persistently dangerous by the state of Pennsylvania. And apparently what's happening is that the black students are beating the stew out of everybody else in the school, and the Asian people in particular, Chinese people in particular, are banding together and objecting, and they say that the administration and the teachers turn a blind eye to these assaults on their kids. Apparently all that kung fu fighting doesn't work so well in real life as it does in the movies, and everybody's getting the snot beat out of them by these thugs. Now, again, this is what's happening because of multiculturalism, because of school integration throughout the nation. And we're to put on blinders. We're to have this cognitive dissonance where we know what's causing this. We know what would cure it. But like the emperor's new clothes, you can't speak about it, or else you've lost your standing as a civilized member in good standing of America and Western civilization.
Well, Keith, I don't know what I could say to that would add to it. You pretty much nailed it, and quite articulately so, I might add.
Well, this is what we have to do. We've got to get people to understand that there's no reason why white people can't have a sense of racial solidarity, or Chinese people can, to match the sense of racial solidarity of the black, Hispanics, American Indians, and others have.
I mean, it's a great, the greatest example of a double standard that exists in the world today, I think, the hypocrisy that dictates whites are evil for wanting to be proud of their culture and their history and want to project a lasting legacy, whereas I've said this 1,000 times if I've said it once, whereas with the other minorities, particularly blacks, it's not only encouraged, but
well,
not
it's
only allowed,
tolerated,
but encouraged.
It's encouraged, and it's supposed to be a sign of virtue. But again, you know, White seemed to think that there is that we've been sold the idea that if we gather together, lobby for our own interests, that we're guilty of prejudice, and this is terrible. But again, I'll take you back to Bill Fredo Pareto's comment that we cited earlier in this show. If you insist on being a lamb, you will find a wolf to eat you. And that's what, quite frankly, our future is until we start banding together and looking out for one another.
You know, our people are truly the mouse being afraid of the elephant type of thing. I mean, we have allowed ourselves to be browbeaten down.
The elephant afraid of the mouse, yeah.
Excuse me. Yes, exactly. I'm sorry. I got that backwards. I was trying to be smart. my thought got ahead of my brain. But, yeah, the elephant being afraid of the mouse, of course, in the old kid's story. But never before have a group of people so intelligent, so beautiful, so accomplished. What are we afraid of? How have we allowed ourselves? I mean, this is the million-dollar question, I guess. Why have we allowed ourselves to be browbeaten into this false sense of guilt and then allowed everything to be taken from us without a fight? I'm not talking about doing anything extra legal or illegal. I'm just talking about just saying, you know, just laughing off our detractors and saying, no, I mean, we're gonna have the same rights and we're going to enjoy the same privileges and freedoms as everyone else, and particularly in the country that's our country. I mean, could you imagine us going down to Mexico and demanding the things that the illegal aliens are demanding here, or going down to, not that we would want to, but Somalia or one of these African countries and saying they got to dismiss all of their traditions, you know, the traditions of piracy and rape and murder, so on and so forth? I mean, we'd get killed. Anyway, we got to take a time out. We'll be back right after this.
Okay. Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
If I didn't tell her, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
I'm here and I'm cold this evening as we inch ever so closer to Christmas. It's December 5th, and it feels every bit of it out there right outside the doors of WLRM Studios tonight. Frigid here in Memphis. I guess, you know, 20 degrees is nothing for our listeners up there in Minnesota. We had some callers from there a couple of weeks ago. But anyway, it's pretty cold for this old southern boy. And my southern confederate across the table from me, Mr. Keith Alexander. And Keith, speaking of the South, we've got another story, the last story of the hour we want to cover tonight, although much more forthcoming when Winston Smith joins me in just a few minutes for tonight's second and third hours. But right across that old Mississippi River into Arkansas, Keith, another manifestation of political correctness at its best.
Yes, right in the heart of the old Confederacy, too, again. What, again, in our Behind Enemy Lines segment, taking a look at the local fish wrap, the communist appeal, as we call it here in Memphis, is an article, Obama suggests Arkansas U.S. District Court judge. Now, of course, he is suggesting a black person for this job. A gentleman by the name of Denzel Price Marshall, a graduate of none other than Harvard University, who got out of Harvard in 1989, clerked for U.S. District Court judge for 2 years, or for, I think, maybe even been a Court of Appeals judge, U.S. Court of Appeals. Then he went into private practice for a few years, and then, predictably, is appointed by the pandering globalist governor of Arkansas. It could have been Mike Huckabee, but I don't think it was. It's probably before his time, to the Arkansas Court of Appeals, and now he's ready to be elevated into the federal judgeship arena, where basically he's got a job for life. The only way he can get out, be thrown out, is if he commits impeachable offenses. Of course, that doesn't even keep them out. Just look at the, what was that, Alcee Hastings in Florida, who was a federal judge caught taking bribes. He gets kicked out of the federal judgeship, and his black constituency promptly elects him as a U.S. congressman. Well, Mr. Marshall is being touted by the two Democratic senators from Arkansas. You know, we could spend a whole hour on why in federal elections the people of Arkansas still vote Democrat. But Blanche Lincoln and Mark Pryor have both gotten together, and they're singing the praises of this individual. And it's emblematic of exactly how the cultural Marxist left intends and is taking over positions of power and authority in America. I guarantee you that Mr. Marshall is from Arkansas somewhere, probably someplace like West Helena. He's practiced law in Jonesboro, but down in the Delta part of Arkansas, which is the black part of Arkansas. And if there is anybody from Arkansas that goes to Harvard or Yale, the chances are at least 9 out of 10 that they're either Jewish or black. And since Jews are only 0.1% of the population of Arkansas, most of them are black. And they're picked specifically so they can get credentialed, then sent back down to the South, and they're going to be promoted into positions of power and authority, like being a federal judge, so they can become, quote-unquote, change agents. That's what they intend them to do. Meanwhile, I'm sure there are plenty of white Arkansans of the same vintage as Judge Marshall who had higher LSAT scores that, of course, would never have gotten into Harvard or Yale because they're not the beneficiaries of affirmative action. They went to the University of Arkansas. So now, even though they have distinguished careers and have proven their worth and earned their spurs out in the hustle and bustle of real law practice, they're told, well, how in the world can you complain about Judge Marshall being preferred before you? Because, look, he went to Harvard. You only went to the University of Arkansas or Vanderbilt or some other place. Well, see, this is how they play the game. Once they get that camel's nose in the tent, you know, people wonder, well, what's the big deal about affirmative action? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the big deal about affirmative action. You're not going to be considered a candidate for the federal judgeships or the U.S. Supreme Court or a lot of other highfalutin appointments that have power and authority in this nation unless you go to those places. I don't care if you have a stratospheric IQ. You're not going to be considered for Paul Wolfowitz's or Richard Pearl's job or a candidacy for the U.S. Supreme Court if you went to the University of Iowa or the University of Minnesota or the University of Arkansas. So this is another example of liberalism in action and how they're taking it over and how white Gentiles are just being pushed to the side in their own nation.
So, again, Keith, what we're talking about is they cherry-pick these folks who score less on their SATs, don't have a high IQ. They do it through diversity. Of course, a diverse group of people is 100% non-white.
Yeah.
But anyway, they get these people like this guy from Arkansas, send him up to Harvard. You know, they put him in there. They put him at the head of the line, even though he would have been behind many other, a number of other more well-qualified candidates for that scholarship. He goes to Harvard, and then, as you said, Keith, you can't argue with that. He's got a Harvard degree, right? Well that's what it
right
takes. That's what it
wrong
takes to get into positions. Never mind the fact that he skipped his way to the top based upon
favoritism.
Nothing less than the color of his skin.
Favoritism, pure and simple. And, you know, when people back in the 60s and 50s were supporting civil rights, they were told at that time they were supporting a colorblind nation, not a just reversing the color of favoritism. And that's what's happened.
Still not hearing anything.
I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you now, James. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Okay. Well, James, we're doing our best to try to work through these problems on the transmission line now, but again, this is just an example that is repeated time and again throughout this nation. And people need to wake up and smell the coffee and realize what's happening. When you see all of these appointments going to either women or Hispanics or blacks.
There it is.
Or homosexuals or whatever. You know, everybody except what Paul Craig Roberts called WHAMs, white heterosexual able-bodied males. It's not just a coincidence. And if you'll read our book, Effects, The Effects of Liberalism on American Society, you'll find out exactly what we're talking about. This is not a coincidence. This is not an effort to tweak or fine-tune the American system and make it a little more fairer or make it a little better. It's an effort to put the bottom rail on top and the top rail at the bottom. And you can see from our decline from power and from wealth in comparison to the rest of the world, there are consequences to be paid when you put the bottom rail on top and the top rail on the bottom.
Well, Keith, that is true, and we're running out of time on this hour, but I want to end this hour on a little bit of a more jovial note, and we take hope in the places we can find it, but every so often, even on small scales, when the playing field is leveled, we find that our brothers and sisters are still able to excel, and one such example was right here in Shelby County, Tennessee. The county in which Memphis sits, a certain private school here in the local area put together, which was quite possibly the greatest two-year run in the history of football in this part of the state. Tell them about it in a minute or less.
They're undefeated. Memphis University School won the state championship in their division, went undefeated this year. In fact, it was noted by the historian for the sports department in the Commercial Appeal, the Memphis newspaper. The Memphis University School is the only school in Tennessee to have an undefeated season in both the 19th, 20th, and now the 21st century. And, again, a traditional private school that is vastly and predominantly white excelled over all of these so-called powerhouse public schools with majority black teams, almost exclusively black teams. In fact, they beat the Mississippi state champion team, South Panola High School, which is known as the University of South Panola, jokingly, in Mississippi, because just about everybody in their graduating class winds up going to a Division I college to play football. Of course, MUS will be lucky if they have two or three guys go to Division I colleges to play.
Never mind the fact that they win the games and win the championships.
And but, they beat South Panola this year.
Yes, they did, and that was earlier in the season. Keith, we're running out of time, but I'm just telling you folks, and believe me if you want to, but I guarantee you that this is not an isolated example. I'm sure it is like this across the country in high
Don't
school sports. But unfortunately, we have affirmative action in sports just like we have it everywhere else. Keith, we're out of time. Thank you for bringing your majesty to the program tonight. We'll see you again next week. Winston Smith's going to be in studio with me in just a few minutes. Sit tight. The second hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool is going to continue right after these words.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 8.